To mark this year's First World War centenary, Suzy Radio now presents A Village at War, the story in 8 episodes of Newdigate in Surrey during the conflict, written by John Colcutt. Episode 6.
The success of the naval blockade persuaded Admiral von Scheer to make a direct challenge against British naval supremacy. The Battle of Jutland was fought on the 31st of May, and although British casualties were greater than the enemy, the German High Seas Fleet never ventured out en bloc into the North Sea again.
Mr. Gordon Clark kindly came over to us on Tuesday, May the 23rd, and gave an excellent address on the Defence of the Realm Act.
This act, known as DORA, virtually put Britain under martial law. People caught spying or interfering with military installations could be court-martialed. The government had power to control all energy supplies, seize land, clear areas of inhabitants, and arrest anyone causing alarm or disaffection.
Will members of the Nursing Association kindly note that Nurse Elderson is now living at Mrs. R. Butcher's, Goss Croft, opposite the Knoll, Newdigate.
Saturday, the 1st of July 1916, the first day of the Battle of the Somme, the expected and much anticipated big push. A mighty bombardment of more than 1.5 million shells preceded the attack. Floors in houses in London and the southeast shook with the vibration from the big guns. When thousands of British troops rose from the depths of their trenches with orders to walk and not run, they encountered the ground littered with unexploded shells, and the German machine gunners, who had emerged from deep down in their well-protected trenches. The enemy's fire was like driving rain across a Scottish moor. Wounded men crawled for shelter into shell holes, while German bullets swept the top of the grass above them with the effect of a heavy wind. The regiments wasted away on an impossible task. Nearly 20,000 British soldiers died on that first day, and nearly 40,000 others were wounded. Among the casualties were over 30,000 new army men, the eager volunteers of 1914, men such as Aubrey Hudson and Arthur Monk.
Early reports of slight losses and some wounded were negated as newspapers published page after page of the dead and missing. Frantic letters to battalions, hospitals and soldier friends were sent in attempts to locate missing friends, relatives and lovers, and to learn more about the circumstances and reasons and manner of death.
July the 25th, 1916. My dear friends, we have been passing through a time of great rush, I think. So many have been helping in the hayfields, and others have been doing useful and important work. In the midst of it all, we had a visit from the Pilgrims. Their visit was a happy one. These ladies are giving up their happy, quiet homes in order to come and speak to us on the most important subjects connected with our life. But their time in Newdigate was made very happy by your kindness to them. We are grieved to say that some of our dear ones at the front have been wounded. We were first told of Albert Hawley, who had been recommended for the DCM, who is now in the military hospital in Kendal. Then we heard of one of the Kempshills, and now we are told that William Hopkins has been wounded and is in hospital in Manchester. I'm afraid that there are others who are wounded, but not, I hope, seriously. May God be with them and restore them to health again.
On September the 25th, for the first time in 2 years of trench warfare, a town, Combla, was wrested from the Germans. 4,000 six-inch shells were captured and cellars full of rifles and ammunition. The heights above blazed with the fires of war, but in Combla there was a sombre quietness. As weary soldiers searched the town for traps, a group of figures emerged from the shadows. "It's the blooming French! Ce sont les Anglais!" Thus the historic words crowned the greatest victory for the Allies since March.
August the 24th, 1916. Our little village has suffered very seriously since I last wrote to you, and we deeply sympathise with those who have lost their dear ones at the front. Sapper William Wyatt leaves behind a very large family, and we feel very acutely for them. We know, too, how deeply Mr. and Mrs. Harbour feel of the loss of their son Stephen, who lost his life in the great attack in Flanders. We grieve also for William Hopkins, who is lying seriously ill in the Albert Edward Hospital in Wigan. William had been seriously wounded, but was progressing well when blood poisoning set in, and his leg had to be amputated, though he was terribly weak at the time. We trust he may recover, but his case is very serious. One of our brightest girls, Alice Collinson, is seriously ill in hospital in London. May God help all in their troubles. Mr. Vine, the caretaker of the village club, has been called up to join the forces, and during his absence for military service, his place will be taken by Mrs. Vine, who has been appointed by the committee.
The members of the choir had a most enjoyable tea given to them by the rector. After the tea, which needless to say was thoroughly appreciated, the members were invited to take part in various games which had been arranged. Mrs. Jansen very kindly came and brought many presents and prizes with her, which were very keenly competed for by those present. We thank her very much for her kindness. The following letter from Alfred Dean, now serving in France, dated 21st of September 1916, has been received. On August the 29th, I applied to the Dorking Tribunal for conditional exemption on the grounds of being a married man of over 40. Out of a staff of 5, there were now only 3 left, including my father, a man nearly 70, to carry on the business of grocer, baker, draper, ironmonger, corn, meal and general store merchants. As a food distributor, I claimed my services were more valuable in my present occupation than doing garrison duty abroad. My application was refused. At the same court, a gentleman applied for his coachman, a single man of 36, and his exemption was granted until the 1st of January 1917. Now, not only do I call this an injustice to myself, but is it fair to the state to have to contribute to the support of my wife when there are single men of his class left? Whilst quite willing to fulfil my obligation to king and country, and recognising the necessity of a gentleman having a coachman, I think that there should be equality for all, which in the present case, like a great many more, there is not.
Another brilliant career has been cut short. England has lost one of her most promising lives, and Newdigate, one who was sincerely respected and liked by all. Lieutenant F. W. Goldberg, son of L. Goldberg, Esquire, was a very clever man and an all-round athlete. He was educated at Charterhouse and University College, Oxford, where he graduated with honours in jurisprudence. He represented his college in cricket and football and gained his half-blue for tennis and hockey. Subsequently, he became one of the England hockey team and was a well-known figure at the Wimbledon Championships. In 1910, he was given an appointment on the staff of the Public Trustees. For some time after the war started, he was not allowed to leave his post. Finally, he joined the Inns of Court Officers Training Corps and received a commission in the Queen's in November 1915. He was sent to Egypt in May 1916 and from there to Salonika and the Dorian Front, where he was killed in action on October the 3rd. Lieutenant Goldberg, in spite of his achievements, was a man of great modesty, and his disposition was charming in its gentleness, childlike simplicity and unselfishness. By rich and poor, he will be remembered as one ever to sympathise with the sorrows and needs of others. To his family, in their second bereavement, Lieutenant H. Goldberg was killed in France 14 months previously. We give our deepest sympathy and may they have the strength to bear their irreparable loss. We also have to announce with much regret the death of Corporal Arthur Monk, who was killed in France on September the 3rd. A memorial service was held on October the 17th. At this service, I spoke of him as one of the most revered and respected by all. One of the straightest and nicest of young men in the village, Corporal Monk was one of our keenest bell ringers and never lost a chance of taking the rope where possible in France as well as England. After training, he went to France on December the 14th, 1914, and was engaged in the Battle of Neuve Chapelle, then at Festubert, where he lost all his things, and then at a terrible struggle at Luce, then at Aubers Ridge, where he was hit fiercely on the head by a German who broke his rifle in the act. He was insensible for some time and had to rest for a few weeks, and lastly he was engaged at Fleurbury, where he met his death. So he had, poor fellow, seen some of the fiercest struggles. His conduct was always very good, and he had two promotions, first as Lance Corporal and then as Corporal, and was promised to be promoted as Sergeant. He was one of the very best, and Newdigate will be very proud of him. He was not a fighting man, but a peace-loving citizen, and took up his profession simply from a sense of duty. And just before going away for the last time, after a short leave, he said to his friends, "I'm going to fight for you and your home." May he rest in peace, and may his bright and good life be an example to us all, and enable us to do whatever may be called upon for the honour of our country and the welfare for those near and dear to us at home.
After a month's fighting between October the 9th and November the 6th, it seemed that the Germans had fought their opponents to a standstill. Then the rain incessantly fell day and night. On the downs and slopes south of Bapaume, the shell holes were constantly filling up with water. The men drowned, not while charging, but usually after dark when the sharpshooters moved laboriously about in the gloom, their boots sticking in the steep slime as they were relieved or came on duty. Many of them had to work all day in the water or mud of the shallow linking trenches. It grew very bleak and chilly at night. During this period, at the Battle of Ancre, the tank was used for the first time.
November the 23rd, 1916. My dear friends, the mission proper has passed, but the paperwork, which is far more important, still remains, and I am most anxious that the good work commenced may, by God's blessing, have a lasting effect in the parish. It will give me great pleasure to do anything in my power for the parish. Would a men's service, say once a month, be a help? Mr. and Mrs. Hudson asked me to write to their son's regiment, as they had not received any news since he had been posted as missing. I have now received a letter dated the 18th of October 1916 from C.R. Stone, Assistant Adjutant, 22nd Fusiliers. In reply to your letter of the 11th of October, I regret to inform you that number 1986, Private Aubrey Hudson, was missing, believed killed, whilst with a carrying party, when the battalion was in action on July the 27th last. No information as to his admission to a medical unit has been received by me, as would almost certainly have been the case had he been admitted to such a station. It is with regret that I am obliged to conclude that he was killed on the way to the front line. It was with heavy heart that I walked down the road to Home Farm with this melancholy information for Mr. and Mrs. Hudson. The son was just 15 years and 1 month old.
We regret to have confirmation of the death of Lieutenant Bray at Souvres-la-Baye from a private in the Queen's who said, "We were advancing to take the Turks' position beyond Chocolate Hill. Losing my company, I got mixed up with Lieutenant Bray's platoon. We were under heavy rifle and machine gun fire, a lot of our fellows getting hit. So Lieutenant Bray gave us the order to retire while he was attending to a wounded man. We had to return across an open cornfield. While going across this, I was wounded. And as I lay wounded, I saw Lieutenant Bray coming across carrying a wounded man. As he was passing me, I called out to him that I was hit, and he replied that he would come back for me if I waited. Immediately after, Lieutenant Bray was hit and fell. I crawled out to him, but found that he was dead. I did not look to see where he was hit, but I think it was through the heart. I must say he died a brave man.
You've been listening to A Village at War by John Colcutt. You heard the voices of Tina Colcutt as the commentator, Steph Bassett as the war correspondent, Lynn Voronetsky as the home correspondent, and David King as the rector. The programme was directed by John Colcutt and produced in Horsham by Tim Hartnell and David King. Join us tomorrow just after 7 p.m. for the next episode. This was a Susie Radio production.